Hi, Navi. Thank you so much for coming in here this afternoon and giving us the time to talk to us. Perhaps could you give me your name and your address?
Navi Hanlon at the Navi Hanlon, 6260 Ivy Trust, New Broad Street in Dublin.
I'm asked, how long have you been in the Ivy Trust?
I've been in the Ivy Trust since 1992. No, sorry. I started working with the Ivy Trust in 1992. I've been in the Ivy Trust since 1989. So you're talking close to, coming up to nearly 40 years maybe. Yeah.
And maybe could you talk to me about, you said you work for the Ivy Trust. Maybe could you talk to me about what you do for the Ivy Trust?
I now manage three estates for the Ivy Trust. The Ivy Trust in Kevin Street, which has 474 units. The Ivy Trust at the Elvedon House estate in Cork Street, which has 50 units. And just recently, Orr Square in Crumblaza Street, which has 30 units. So, man has kept busy. Yeah. walks out close on the 650 units in total. Yeah.
And that's a really interesting scenario, if I'm correct. So you're a resident of the Ivy Trust, and you're also a property manager of it as well. Yeah. Could you maybe talk to me about how that works?
It has its pros and its cons. I started living there as you know now, before I started working there. I started working as we were the trust. The Kevin Street estate was, half of the estate was waiting for rejuvenation kind of thing. It was empty. There were the old stock buildings where you had your four flats on one landing, which are your toilet and your washroom on separately, and people were sharing and all that. So they're in the process of doing up them and making them into modern day flats, basically. And I started working there when the developer started working in there to renovate them flats as a security at night time for a few extra shillings. And the job I was in full time during the day, that was in 91, that went into liquidation. So I had to give up that, the security end of things. And I must have been doing something right, because Fred Stevens was the CEO at the time. Actually came back to me and said, look, there's a caretaker's job here if you want it. So I took the caretaker's job, working 5 days a week, 29 hours a week. And I basically progressed up through the ladder to become a manager the estate. Like. And then it just grew on from there, yeah. Whilst raising a family in there also, mind you, yeah.
And is it difficult, because it's a really interesting model that the Ivy Trust has with this, but do you find it difficult at sometimes being the resident and people are coming to you with their issues or their concerns? Is there a mechanism for that?
Yes, not so much now that I'm used to it. More than anything else, I'm used to it now. I wouldn't say it doesn't happen now. People's expectations are fairly great. Like, you're raising your family, you have a day off, you're walking down, bringing the kids down to the park or what have you, and you meet Joe Bloggs, his tenant lives in F block or what have you, and he was waiting to get his tap fixed, and of course he becomes very irate because his tap isn't fixed whilst I'm on my day off trying to buy my own business. So yeah, or you'd be in the shopping centre getting shops with the missus, and they'd be come up behind you and they'd be like, I know you're not walking, but like, I've got a problem with my windows, or I've got a problem with my heating. Like, you never walk away, so you're going to have to turn off without being too, I don't know what word I've been looking for. You still have to be diplomatic is the word I'm looking for, basically, with the tenant, that you're not being kind of, you're not downgrading them or anything, like, you know what I mean? You're trying to just say, look, I'm not walking today, and look, I'll try and fix that up tomorrow or the next day when I'm back in walking. Like, you know, hopefully they take it. A lot of them do. A lot of them go by, drag away, or whatever, call you a name or two and walk away. You're like, you know, that's what.
But on the flip side of that, do you feel that having a presence on site also makes people realize, like, who isn't, it doesn't make the management seem kind of abstract or not a person? Would you think that has an impact
It has an impact. Having on-site staff has a huge impact on the estate. Where if you compare it to other social houses, estate, corporation estates, what have you, that have no on-site management. There's a lot more. I'm not going to say we don't have antisocial behaviour, we do. It's a lot lesser. than it would be, because we'd have, we did like on the Kevin Street estate, which is one of the largest estates in Ireland, basically, and we'd have five members of staff live on site, and like it deters a lot of things. People know that we're there. We'll see what's happening, and we can stop it from happening. We get a great rapport with the tenants as well. The simple fact that we're there for them. Something happens at 2:30 in the morning. There's an alarm going off, or there's a big flood about it. They're not waiting 2 or 3 hours for somebody to turn it off. They're not afraid to knock on your door and say, look at it. So they knock on your door and say, and of course, we start to do as best we can. Put a plaster on until the next day. Like. So that literally stands for you as a worker. And they appreciate it. Like. And you can see in them that they appreciate it. You know?
Maybe, now we're talking about that, maybe for people who aren't aware of a space like the Ivy Trust, could you talk to us about the community there? How does the community work in the Ivy Trust, particularly, let's say, on Kevin Street?
There's a great sense of community in the Ivy Trust. More so now since COVID. COVID had a huge impact on several different levels. But when you look at how it brought communities together, it was really unbelievable. Especially now, what you're seeing in the two estates, in the Ivy Trust and Cork Street, Melbourne House, like they're very, very close knit communities. But you'd still have a lot of people that wouldn't talk to a neighbour that lives two blocks down, or they'd had a falling out or what have you. But there was nothing else to do at that time. They were all sitting around and looking, I'm going down to the shop, do you want me to get you something when I'm down there? Or, you know, the amount of people that literally reached out and helped out, that never spoke to each other in their lives, never gone off down the road now, having cups of coffee, having a pint together, going out to the two bets in the bookies, Johnny, I'm going out to the bookies, what are we throwing? Like, the way it brought people together, absolutely brilliant. Absolutely. Now, with us in the Ivy Trust, I don't know whether you've seen it, it'll be on the Ivy Trust websites and it's on social media and all. A few of the tenants, it actually started off in Ringsend, I believe, where tenants got together and doing bingo nights. And we decided to do a bingo night. And I'll just give you this story. I was approached. It was a good Friday morning. Of course, our main offices were all closed. I'm running the estate. COVID basically tight, and nobody was supposed to interact with each other and all this sort of thing. And I was at the pros and said, look, have they done a bingo night down the road? And how can we do this doing up here? We've got 27 blocks in Kevin Street with balconies. And we said, it was him and Han, and they said, look, we can do it. We've got a DJ, we just have to keep separate. We have to do what needs to be done. We marked the complex out, we'll do it properly. We'll have runners, the people don't have to come on the path of balconies. We'll have runners in different areas that run up and pass over, or what have you. We'll be masked up, gloved up, the whole lot. I was kind of damned if I did and damned if I don't. You know what I mean? So I took it that, okay, look, I'm going to bite the bullet here. If it works, okay, I'll get some plaudits out of it. If it doesn't work, I'll probably sack that Monday morning. You know? Done it. Board, it was an absolute thriving success. The board got out to the local media. We had television. We hadn't got television. We had radio stations. We were on radio stations that we were doing this. If anybody's down there, just peep your head in the gate. You'd say it's supposed to be a fantastic night. Dublin Fire Brigade came down. They pulled in and they put their sirens on just to thank everybody for what they were doing. Basically, what we done it, the proceeds went, we've done five of them during COVID, and the proceeds went to different local charities. We ended up, within those five, we ended up collecting €28,000. That was split between, the first one was for, we bought iPads for James Hospital. And that's what got out to the radio stations. That's why the Fire Brigade came down. But that was the whole community coming together issue. Walked a treat. And if everyone do go on to the website and see it. You'll see pictures, you'll see different aspects. Really, really good. But that is literally, that bound from communities that was there beforehand, coming together and making good at a situation where it needed to be done. Like, you know, really good. So, answer to your question, the community on not just the our estates, any social housing estate, seem to do that. And it's really good.
Do you feel the impact of that time? Is there still an impact from that time of community, or do you feel people have gone back to how it was prior to the pandemic?
I think you might have both. You might have both. There's a lot of people I can count on one hand, people older, maybe older generation, that are still fearful of coming out. Still, they've been impacted by it in the negative sense. Like, they afraid to come out now, in case they get ill, in case they pick up off of them. There's still a lot, thankfully, there's a lot of people still doing what they were doing during COVID, helping the neighbours, carrying on with the good spirit, carrying on with the community work and what have you, you know. It's thriving around. Now, I living in Dublin 8, around the whole Dublin 8 area, really good, absolutely fantastic. Antisocial behaviour elements start thriving during the pandemic, unfortunately still thriving. So that's an aspect that kind of grew and hasn't leveled back down again, you know, unfortunately. So I don't know how we're going to get around that. That's a job for a different day. Like, yeah.
So Nubby, maybe could you tell, where in Dublin were you?
I was born in a small little area called Perrystone, in between Greenhills, Walkers Down, Terrynure, Kimmage, and Cronin.
And did you grow up in local authority housing housing?
My mother and father owned their own house. All the houses around that area were all privately owned, so it was a private housing estate, sure. Yeah.
And what kind of, again, having that kind of upbringing, what kind of brought you into social housing? Was it...
The love of my life brought me into social housing, to be honest with you. I met a wee girl, lived down in Chambers Street, off Carr Street. So rather than she come up to me, I went down to her, and haven't moved out of Dublin ever since. That was back in 1986. No, I will tell you a lie, I met her in 1981. So that was back in 1981. Little tot of a man I was.
What did you think of, so do you remember what you thought of kind of local authority housing or social housing before you were really kind of entrenched in it?
I didn't have a thought about it, to be honest with you, because I grew up, I wasn't a part of social housing. I we'd go into town for shopping, that kind of thing, in Mal, we'd go down to Thomas Street, around the Liberties, around the Ivy Markets and all the rest, that sort of thing. I was always intrigued by the stalls and all that, how they done their, made their living and all. But it was only when I went down and started hanging around Chambers Street, got to know people down there, there was a different, I don't know whether a different class, I wouldn't say class. It was just a different way people lived, a different way they went around, a different way they held, they expressed themselves, that kind of thing. I wouldn't say class. There was never a different class. Like, it was just, I'd nearly say it was better than where I grew up, to be honest with you. I'm probably biased there, because I'm down here more than I was up there now, you know. So, yeah, I'd stick with that one, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just kind of interesting. And I suppose it is trying to think, because you're such a kind of interesting perspective, that you are coming from private housing into social housing and now being part of the management from it. You have a really long kind of trajectory of kind of understanding of it. So when you first, you and your wife went on the waiting list, the housing list, did you, in the 1980s?
Thankfully, we didn't have to wait too long. There was a Chambers Street at the time, there would have been three blocks of flats. It was City Council run flats. But there was a committee there, and they kind of, they tended to look after their own, is the wrong word. But the committee had a lot of say in who, well, came into them, the estate. Like. So, Margaret's family, the wife's family, they there nearly all the lives. So they had a kind of a vested interest in it. So we got housed fairly rapid in there, in a one bedroom. It was a bedside flat and on the ground floor. Then we were looking, the kids came along then, and we had to get a bigger flat. Teresa's garden was just up the road. And of course, I said, known, getting to know people around the area. Got to know a few of that. It was the same workings more so with the committee in Teresa's Gardens. So we went up, had a chat with the committee up there. Basically, the two were very close together. So we got a flat up there very quickly. I didn't spend, in all three cases, we were lucky enough that we didn't spend time on the housing list at that time. And I don't know what the actual waiting list or the time of waiting was on the housing list at that time either. Like, you know, so, but we got housed fairly rapid in all three flats, thankfully. Like, you know, yeah.
But could you describe to us what, can you remember, like, could you just kind of visualise and describe to us what your bedsit was like on Chamber Street?
Bedsit on Chamber Street was, it was good and it's bad in sessions. You got, number one was on the ground floor. Chamber Street, well, would have been those three main pubs that the locals would drink in down in Newmarket, which was, Chamber Street would have been between Newmarket and Teresa's Gardens. Teresa's Gardens was a very big flat complex, so it would have been the main route up and down to these pubs. So it'd be quiet during the day, it wouldn't be so quiet night time. People going backwards and forwards and banging up against your door, and probably not going to say what else they'd be doing. But like, if you're trying to raise, you got two small kids in a flat and we're listening to that, it wasn't really good. But then saying that, I'm a bit of a hypocrite, like, because I went up to live in Teresa's Gardens, so I came good out of it. But the flat itself was a bedsit. You had your living area, your sleeping area in the one room. You had a little off the, it was like a non-suite kitchen, it was just off the main room, and a little toilet outside. Now, a little toilet being the opposite word, like, it was really tiny. Like, I wasn't a small man, like, I had a hard time going in and having a shower without banging my knees off the toilet, you know. it was interesting. Yeah, they would say it was a nice place to be, but as you wouldn't be raising too many kids in it, like, you know. Yeah.
And then you moved to Teresa's Gardens.
Yeah.
And you had two children at the time?
I had two children at the time. We moved up to a three-bedroom flat in Teresa's Gardens. Again, on the ground floor. We had, it was literally, that would have been maybe, we moved up to Teresa's Gardens maybe in 87. We spent 2 years in Teresa's Gardens. Now, 87 Teresa's Gardens was a very rough area. So you had a lot of different issues up there. Main one would have been joyriders in cars going up and down, and we were up at the back block, so that was, you know, you'd rally all the way up, and they'd be pulling the handbrakers up the rally, they'd be bouncing off the side of the wall of the flat, and like, you couldn't let the kids out. It's a nice summer's evening, you were sitting in it, you just be put them over railings into this little garden area. It was the high with grass, and there was rats and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't like, you know, I used to always go down to the parks. There was nowhere really to actually raise the kids safely. So then we were told about Ivy Trust. And I ended up, cap in hand, going down, having made an appointment with Fred Stevens for to get down on the waiting list, explain the situation out, the way we were living. And again, thankfully, we were only, I'd say, a month, 2 months before we were offered a flat down in Teresa's Gardens. And it was literally just the week of Christmas that we were offered, I moved in that week and done the place up all over Christmas.
And did you say that was 1991?
That was 1989.
Oh,
that was 1989, yeah.
So you were 2 years in Teresa's Gardens.
2 years in Teresa's Gardens.
And maybe could you describe what... Teresa's Gardens is quite an interesting complex in that there's how many ways in?
You had... Legally, you had one way. No, you had one main artery up through. But then you, on both ends of the complex off the North Avenue, you had two walkways in, which over time became big enough to drive an articulated lorry in, because there were lads breaking down different parts of walls and all that kind of thing. So you had main arteries there. Then you had what would have been Wills's factory out the back. You had Wills' factory in the back of the Coombe Hospital. Both of them had a lot of... Wills' factory, though, to be honest with you, they had a big playing area. Football pitches and that. Like, Teresa's Gardens had a football team couple of football teams used to play in what was called Wills's Field. But again, you had a lot of antisocial behaviour at the weekends and all. But he had access through there. There was a little bit of antisocial behaviour going on. The guards were chasing somebody. There was no... They were in the North Avenue. You know, they were off up the top of South Circular Road in a matter of minutes. And the guards were left standing. Like, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
And you mentioned that, like, the football clubs and that. Maybe could you talk to us about what are some of the kind of more social things that are coming out of, that you've been a part of? In kind of
that I've been a part of,
yeah, a part of or aware of. Or...
I'm actually at the moment we are there's a you don't know whether you're aware of the Cabbage Patch, it's called. It's at the back of the Ivy Trust, between the Ivy Trust and New Street. You got New Street, you got you come out the back of side of Kevin Street, you got the Ivy Trust, and you got Cathedral View houses, corporation houses, just literally beside us. And there's a laneway goes up, and there's a park at the top of the laneway. It used to be an old Huguenot burial ground. And over the years, it's been changed into different things. But back in the, I think it was the early, it was the mid-80s, it was changed into a park. And there's an old playground pulled up the top of the park and all. But over, say, through the 90s and that, the corporation got in and they changed it, and they put a little a bigger playground, and they tried to upgrade it and what have you. But always, always big antisocial behaviour element in it on the grounds that it was in out of the way. There was rat runs, there's about seven, there's about five or six different exits out of it. So it was easy to exit if anybody was coming chasing you. Big drugs related issues within it. Myself, I won't mention on this, but Pastor's Cathedral, Dublin City Council, and the local guards, we came into, I'm going back to 2018, we got together, listen lads, what can we actually do with this? Now it was financially was being pushed more by St. Pastor's Cathedral, they had the money financially to help out. So we got together, we sat down, we around the table, and we decided, look, we can try and make this better. And the corporation, with their funding, we came to arrangements whereas we get in, we'll start doing it up, we start holding kind of kids' play area, playground, parties of a summer's evening. We had dog shows in it. We have Halloween. Halloween used to be a nightmare. It used to be big, huge. One of the biggest bonfires around the Dublin area was held in there. Like Beirut, from say the end of August going into November, with the amount of fireworks were being set off. And of course, being a flat complex, it was very hollow. You got the noise of the bangers going overhead. It was unbelievable, the noise. People used to move out coming up to Halloween. Because of the noise, the older people, they move up to their kids' places, wherever they were living, just to get out of it for a couple of days. We ended up doing away with the bonfire and having a family night in it. We had a big screen, put a film on the Hocus Pocus, that sort of thing, on the screen for the kids. We had clowns, we had face painting, we had different activities going on within the place. And it worked to the extent where we haven't got rid of the actual antisocial behaviour element there. It's moved out of the park. It's gone. Unfortunately, you never get rid of it. It moves on somewhere else. But it's moved out of the park a bit. And we're basically reclaiming it, for want of a better word. There's people, young people with kids going back in using it. There's older people going back in using it. COVID came along, hit that a bit. The walks all stopped and all, but we're getting back on track again. We're building it. We've built up a great rapport around. There used to be the lads in the corporation house, the lads and lassies in the corporation houses next door in New Street Gardens, Cathedral View and all. It was us against them, against the Ivy Trust. Are you living to Ivy Trust later on? But now we've got, I bought two there any given day. Nobby, how's it going? What's the crack, Alvarez? And look, do you know what such and such is happening here today? Literally all walking together to make this happen. So you got a large section of the community not just the Ivy Trust, you got the houses next door, you got the houses in Long Lane, all going up to the tenters and all coming together here in this project to make it a better place. And that started 5 years ago. It's now 7 years ago. It's 25 now, 7 years ago. And we're building on it. So hopefully we'll get there in the end where we'll never have no antisocial behaviour. But you get it to the level where it's accepted. Not acceptable, but you can live with it, you know.
So you moved into the Ivy Trust in 1989, and you're in the Kevin Street flats, are you?
Yes.
Okay, so you're in the large complex. Could you describe to me, what does your Kevin Street flat look like?
My flat, I lived in three flats in Kevin Street. I lived in 491, which was, I moved into it. There was very little done with it at the time. I was happy to get it. I went in, done it up myself. Lived there for, lived there for until 97. Yes, 97. I was working, you know, I wasn't working for them at that stage. I ended up working for them as a caretaker for them in 97. I was offered that was a two bedroom flat. I needed a three bedroom because both kids are a boy and a girl. And they had just finished the job that I started up in between A and N, the renovations. And I was offered a flat, a three bedroom flat in A block, which overlooked the main gate. Because I worked for them, it was ideal for me to be there to see who was going in and out of the gate. My wish was for a three bedroom flat, the kids having their own bedrooms. So I lived there until 2000, and I think it was 15. We then built onto an extra floor onto the Kevin Street end of the flats, because there was a flat roof, and instead of putting money into fixing the roof, we got a grant off the local government to build more flats on top for and cater for single people who weren't getting catered for on the housing list. And we got on the grounds that we do that, we got the grant off the local government. They again wanted somebody living up there that worked for the trust. So at that stage I was managing the area. So to make life a little bit easier for me, get me away from the gate, they put me, so I got a little penthouse and set myself up on the top floor, overlooking the west of the city. Absolutely brilliant. So living with the Ivy Trust and walking with the Ivy Trust for me is basically worked out fairly well, to be honest with you. Yes, so it's the pros and cons. You have your bad parts growing up and all. But I've done okay, to be honest with you.
So you're just on your own now, are you?
No, I still have the my wife still.
Okay, sorry, I didn't want to ask.
I've done pretty well there. She's still there. Like,
sorry, no, but I didn't want to ask. Yeah. I didn't know how to ask. No. Sorry, you made it sound like it was for single.
No, it's a three bedroom flat.
Oh
no, it's a three bedroom flat. Yeah, no. They literally built this flat so they would have a presence on that floor as well, because you were taking homeless people in, people single people, so you basically needed somebody up there to be able to, yes, control the situation that they were managing up there, and manage it properly to whereas people coming in, you've always had an issue where the people homeless that they're coming from not safe environment kind of thing, and they come in, they don't know how to, they forget how to kind of live life themselves. So you have to manage, help them have a sustainable tenancy. Help them have a sustainable tenancy, you know. And again, it's worked. Like we have people living up there since it's opened in 2000. It opened back in 2000, like, and since then, there's people have lived there, have moved out and got better. They've got themselves partners and families, and they moved on. And so, it was Fred Stevens' idea, initiative to put this up here, and it worked. You know, so the audience was do something right, you know.
I guess, and that's it again, Navi, with your perspective. What is the role? What is, like, from your opinion, what is the role of social housing within society?
Well, number one, give people somewhere to live, somewhere. Yeah, I've got to say decent to live, yeah, but like a lot of people come out of homelessness, marriage breakdowns. Like there's the amount of people nowadays that are out there with, they're finding it very hard to get homes anywhere. Even couples coming together now trying to buy houses, that kind of thing. It's not even impossible. Like, so we give them somewhere to start off. Social housing, you're not paying exorbitant prices. It used to be that a lot of them used to be set rents. Now they're based on incomes, whatever your income, the percentage of your income. So you can live off you can afford the rent. And if you can't afford the rent, the government subsidises as well with the richer apps and what have you, you know. So we're giving people somewhere to live, somewhere to get themselves back on the housing ladder. And if they want to stay there, it's a tenancy for life. It's totally up to you. If you're happy enough where you are, please stay there. And 90% of them do, because they come in, they see what's their surroundings are, they can involve in the community. If you get yourself a better job, you're getting more money, you can save up, you can get that house of your own or move into a bigger flat elsewhere. You can do that also. Like, so we're there, we're kind of the middleman where we bring you in, we give you, I know I said it before, we give you a flat, we'd help you live in that flat. I might go a little bit off track now, whereas like I'm an estate manager. My lads that walk under me are caretakers. Caretakers is a very big word in the fact, whereas they come in, they're contracted to look after the building, they're contracted to look after the grounds, they're contracted to look after the people's needs. We end up looking after the people. There's people there that are vulnerable. There's people there who need care. They're health issues. They've different other aspects of life. I could turn around and say that I'm an estate manager. I'm a forced aider. I'm a counsellor. I'm a different sort of counsellor. Like you have bereavement counselling, you have alcohol abuse counselling, you have drug abuse counselling. We deal with everything. Literally everything, and it just becomes part of your day to day because you get engrossed in what you do, you like what you do, you like the people trust you, they come over to you just to talk to you, and like social housing and anybody I know, I've been in a lot of situations, a lot of different areas, a lot of different conferences and that sort of thing, where just different social housing backgrounds, there different conferences, different those are two and other different agencies. And they all tend to do the same thing. We bring people in and we mind them. We bring them up, you know. Unknowns to yourself, you don't go out of your way, you don't start off bringing them in to mind them, but that's what you do. So, with my social housing cap on, that's what I'd say social housing is. Now, you ask somebody who doesn't live in social housing, they'd probably say it's something completely different, you know. Yeah.
And maybe, Nobby, I know your days are always very different. I can only imagine that. Yeah. But could you talk us through a typical day of your life in the Ivy Trust?
You're right in saying they differ, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you'd be going into work. You'd have the issues you generally have with the complex itself, the general upkeep of the complex, the general upkeep of the buildings, the different contractors coming in to carry out repairs to the buildings. You'd have to deal with all that. You'd have to make sure the lads that walk underneath me, the caretakers and that kind of thing, are abreast of what they need to do on that particular day. Because there's never, as you well know, you're dealing with people. There's never one day is the same. Never one day is the same. Yes, you have your given jobs to do, your given duties. But there's always that thing that something happened last night and we have to sort it out tomorrow, and you have to sort out who's going to deal with that today. Have I got time to do it? yes, maybe I have, but if I haven't, no, look, at you're going to do that today, or you're going to do that today, you know. And it's that's what makes the job interesting, the life interesting, that you're doing something different. You're never coming in and doing a mundane job, let's say. You're never doing that. It's always something different you're doing. Like, you're never stuck in the same wheel, going around and around and around all the time. You know?
And maybe, I know you're talking about kind of the maintenance of the buildings. Maybe like the Kevin Street ones. Could you describe what that building is like? Because it's quite iconic.
Yeah, you've got two aspects of Kevin Street there. You're looking at, it's an old building. The Ivy Trust, as you probably know, was started by Cecil Gillis back in the late 1800s. Kevin Street and Pasta Street were the two first. They actually demolished the slum areas around that area and built those two big estates to cater for the people that were living in the slum areas. And mate, again, they basically started off social housing as such, because the corporation that took notice and started doing the same. And the buildings there, the Kevin Street, Patrick Street ones, they are standing there since the late 1800s. So the buildings themselves, the brickwork themselves, are very old. You'd have the right-hand side, if you knew Kevin Street, it's a huge estate. You go right-hand and left-hand side, is the main artery going through. The right-hand side of Kevin Street would have been starting the building in the, say, 1930s, going through to the 1960s, like the late 1950s. The far side would have been late 1800s up into the early 90s. So that they'd be older buildings. There'd be a lot more delicate work to be doing with them. You've got all the plumbing work. Electrical work, not necessarily, because there'd be all new electrics in it. But there'd be still a lot of old copper piping and that, and the problem we have now, literally now, is we'd have contractors. We had the Ivy Trust had the one contractor that had two plumbers, carpenter, and kind of an all round general operative, if you want of a better word. They were subcontractors working for a company called McConnell's. And McConnell's got the contract for carrying out repairs and what have you, back in the 40s, the late 40s, going into the 50s. They are actually only closing up shop at the end of this month, believe it or not. But we have plumbers, carpenters, and a general operative that has worked literally nowhere else but for the Ivy Trust for that amount of time. They were subcontractors, but they literally worked for the Ivy Trust. That was their contract. So they were kept going, so to speak. That's how vast the place was. They kept one company in business. That company didn't need anybody else, because they were kept in business by the Ivy Trust. So that's like when you're looking at repairs to the buildings, the newer complexes that are spread out now around Dublin, they're all new builds, so you wouldn't have as much issues. But the older buildings, yes, you would have, because you'd have old brickwork, you'd have old glazing, you have windows, wooden windows, sash windows there, which conservation orders on them. We'd have breezes coming in through, and you have to take them out, redo them, because it's a constant go all the time. You know?
And the Ivy Trust, it has a museum in it as well.
Yes.
Are you responsible for the upkeep of the museum?
I'm not, thankfully, because that'd be a big job. No, I'm glad I'm not. That's on a Pasta Street estate, on our Bullard estate. That, again, was...
Yeah, maybe could you describe to us what that is?
That's a flat that the same family lived in. Again, I may be wrong in this, but it was early 1900s that the family moved into that flat. Through the war years, one of the I think it was the son of the original tenant went to war. he became pretty big in the I think it was the English army. But he came home and he raided his family there as well. The flat is still in, now Nelly, I can't think of the woman's son, he had to show me now, I can't think of the girl's last name, I should know it. But like, she only passed away recently, as in, say, maybe 20 years ago. And the family, that the flat never ever changed. It's still the same as it was since they got that tenancy back in the early 1900s. Never changed. It's a one-bedroom flat. It's a two-bedroom flat, sorry. And there's different generations of that family have been born and bred in that family, in that flat. It's exactly the same. The family themselves gave it back to the trust and asked, could it be kept that way? Because of the condition it's in pristine condition. For a flat that is that old, that had never changed. And we open it to the public. Anybody wants to come and look at that flat and look at the way people lived back in the early 1900s can come in. For literally small donations, a box inside the door, whatever you put in, you can be a euro or 20 euros, whatever you want to do yourself, put into that box. And you can have a look at that. And you're told the history. It's an unbelievable place. And if you haven't seen it, please go and see it. Absolutely. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Bobby, thank you so much here. I'm just trying to get a sense, maybe, are there certain days of the year? I know you were talking about the kind of bingo during COVID. But are there days during the year, you talked about Halloween and now how that's transforming. Mm-hmm. Are there other days of the year that you see the community coming together in the Ivy?
Christmas.
Talk to me about Christmas.
Every Christmas, the community come together. They throw a Christmas party for the kids and the adults. Like we only have on there last Christmas, where we change the we don't keep with the same committee. There's a community council, a tenant council we call them. We don't stay, they have to change every 2 years. Now, if it's on a vote basis, whereas the people within the complex vote who they want to get in, every block has a say. And there has been people that have voted in non-stop, all the time. But after, they're 10 years, look, stand down for a year or two, there's something that's down, I couldn't say, you know. But like, that happens. But it's new thoughts, there's new... The new committee always, it's like a new brush, you get a clean sweep and the different ideas come in and all that sort of thing. This last Christmas, what we generally did was, the Ivy Trust gives them a budget every year. It's €5,000 budget every year to do what they want with it during the year for the community. And these came in literally at the end of the year, the budget year. I think there's $2,000 or $3,000 left in the budget. So they ended up getting a big, we've got a big, huge car park, we've got different, we've got 300 odd car parking spaces there. But there's one particular car park area, there's a huge area. They've got a big marquee in. And they combined a day for the older people and the younger people. Whereas the older people, it was during the day, we had music in it, we had a little bingo session in it, we had the lad doing magic tricks. For the older people and for the kids, we had the ball in, we like cups of tea, if you had your cup of tea, you know, I'm not saying there wasn't people going into the handbag getting out the little bottles, like that happened as well. But like, that, once it's under the table, you don't mind. But like, again, everybody got together. Darkness came, we had Santa came in on a horse and cart and came in and gave old and young presents alike, like, you know what I mean? That was all put together. Like the tenants put their monies together. It was all with the budget. We threw the rest in just to make it work. That's Christmas. We do it every year as well. We invite the Ivy Trust, invite the older people, anybody over 65. We do a day trip down the country. Again, different area. We got to hire a couple of coaches, get them onto the coaches, start off 9 o'clock in the morning, go down middle of Ireland, stop off different gardens we go around, stop off for breakfast, first off, you get a cup of tea, cup of coffee, a couple of scones maybe, and then head off down to where we're after, be it at, say, at loan, for want of a bit. Start trip around that loan. On the way back, we'll stop into a hotel between both places. We spend about 2 hours, 2.5 hours in the hotel, evening meal. We have a lad there playing the organ, and he'll sing a little sing song, and then we have the tenants get up. Remember, it was like a little karaoke with the screen. Whoever wants to get up and get a sing, happy days, there you go, or up and dance. So that's that as well. There's difference, if there's different kind of big anniversaries going on or what have you, and if they're a very popular member of the community, they tend to, again, bring it out onto the square, and we'll have a little party day out in the square, and then broken up at a reasonable hour in the evening time, and off they go up to the pub, the local pub, and finish it off, what have you. So it's always, there's always something good going on, like, you know, and that's literally what builds a good community. Like it's always been there. I moved in, as I said, back in the mid-80s there. You could feel, it was the late 80s, you could feel it in the place when you walked in. When you'd have to be living in the likes of Chambers Street and Trees' Gardens, where there was anti-social behaviour, you can literally feel the difference when you walk into these communities. Like, you know, there's no edginess, you know, so... Yeah, it's only when you've witnessed both ends you can see it. Generally.
And would your wife be really active in the community there?
My wife actually works for the Ivy Trust as well. My son and daughter work for the Ivy Trust, so it's a family-run situation out there. Yes, my works. We have laundries. We have two separate laundries. Again, for. People, there's nowhere proper. If you haven't got a balcony, there's nowhere proper for you to dry your clothes. So we have the laundries, they're open in the morning times and the evening times. And there'd be three girls run them, two of them in the mornings, one in the evening. And you bring a laundry, you leave it there, she washes it, she dries it, folds it, and might collect it later on. All for the grand tune of €3. You got a wash and dry done for €3. Where else would you get?
You know. I'll bring my laundry down
there
to you.
There you go. You're in the know now. You know me.
So that's your wife is involved with that, is
yes.
she?
Yes. Now she it's all part of the community. Anybody that lives there would be encouraged to be part of it. Like, you know, yeah. And everybody does, thankfully. They're okay. There is a certain half of the don't. They're lost. No, they're lost. And they say it.
So you've been in the Ivy Trust now for
89 for two. You're going to be doing me maths now. You're 34 years.
34 years?
No, 26 years. 36 years.
36 years? Mm-hmm. Wow.
There you go.
I know. Yeah. Wow. 36 years.
I've worked for them the last, well, I started working in 92, so yeah. I've worked for them the last 23 years.
And how, again, we've spoken so much about it, but again, to someone who doesn't know what the Ivy Trust is like or what is the Ivy Trust, how would you describe it to someone who only knows it as kind of a housing estate?
It's more than a housing estate. It is. There's no two ways about it. No, I'm probably, again, I'm talking with my Ivy Trust hat on, but like anybody around the Dublin 8 area knows the Ivy Trust. Like there's very few people around the Liberties, around that section doesn't know the Ivy Trust, and they know how we work and what we do. We don't just house people. Like anybody that's coming into the Ivy Trust, they know they're lucky that they're coming into the Ivy Trust because they get in and we look after them. I've been working for the Ivy Trust as long as I'm working, the 33 years. I've carried out maybe 5 evictions in those 33 years. You tell me any other estate manager or any other organisation that has done such a low volume of evictions. was we don't. We help them. We help them as much as we possibly can before we evict them. And that's it's a known fact. Everybody knows it. As like our housing list had to be closed. There was that volume of people trying to get onto it. Like, it had to be closed so as we could walk it down and walk it down again. And that's closed for years. Like, it's closed for years.
And here we are, Nabi. We're doing this for a social housing festival.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of words of wisdom would you have for a festival on social housing?
Wisdom from me, no. I don't know. Try and take a leaf out of what we've done over the years. I'm a big advocate for having on-site staff, have the proper protocols in place to deal with all the issues that you do have to deal with when you're looking after people. It's not just in there, look out, there's your flat, you look after that. It's not, it's bigger than that. It's huge. You have to get in, you have to make sure they're happy in there, you have to make sure their environment is good around them. If there's something happening next door to them or down the way from them and you have the power to stop it, stop it. Don't stand back and expect somebody else to go in and stop it. Like, that's what happens. It festers, it gets too big and you're not able to stop it. Like, we all of our estates, we have staff, if they're not living on the estates, they're living very close to the estates. And we're there within minutes. Like, so we can deal with things. We do deal with things. We are known, we've got a, with the local, say, charities, with the local health authorities, with the local Garda, we've got great rapport with every one of the major players that is needed to look after somebody. We've got good rapport with all them, and we can pull them in when need to be, you know, and help them out as best we can. That's what is a good housing body. They have that culture, for want of a better word, to do that. That's what they do, you know. And I say, if the rest of the housing bodies out there took note of that, we may have a better society, you know. Yeah.
Nabi, thank you so much for being so fantastic today. Thank you.
I just hope I came across something.